This is Weekend from the BBC World Service. Now, when countries at war finally agree a peace deal, a lot of people breathe a big sigh of relief. Sometimes peace can be a long time coming. But when the foreign arbitrators, peace envoys and war reporters finally go home, what happens to that fragile peace? A new book called Imagine: Reflections on Peace explores that very idea. Eminent war photographers, journalists and experts return to six countries that have experienced war in recent times. Cambodia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Colombia, Lebanon, Northern Ireland and Rwanda. They try to answer the question, what makes a successful, lasting peace? The book was the concept of Gary Knight, the director of the Seven Foundation and editor of this new book. He joins us now. Welcome, Gary. You start your book saying that for nearly two decades, war was your life and that you just had enough.
Yes, I'd spent, two decades working for Newsweek magazine ostensibly, starting a career in Cambodia, going through Rwanda, Bosnia. So by the time I came back from the invasion of Iraq in 2003, I decided that, you know, enough was enough. And also looking at that war, I thought, well, how on earth will peace ever be made there? And that's where this project really came from, exploring other countries that I covered at war to figure out what we could learn from them.
And what did you learn?
Learned a great deal. And as you say in the introduction, you know, I think we tend to look at peace through the prism of successful peace processes which end war and then turn away. And what we learned with this is that peace is a very, very messy business, and it takes an awful lot of time. Decades, sometimes generations, and it's very complex. And you know, whoever is in power needs to focus on it very, very deliberately. And it's very hard to make it successful for ordinary citizens who often, decades after all war ends, still don't have access to basic services, healthcare, education for their children, and a stable economy.
There are failures and there are relative success stories. How does Cambodia's attempt at creating peace, for example, compare with one of another country, perhaps Rwanda's?
Great question. And I think when you measure it by, you know, Cambodia and Rwanda both went through devastating genocides, and so it seems a little tough sometimes to criticize them. But Cambodia really has been a failure. It's been a political failure. It's a one-party state run by the same man who was in power in 1979. It was a former Khmer Rouge officer. There's been no process of justice and reconciliation there at all. The economy has improved, but is dire and doesn't create opportunities for local people. In Rwanda, where you have a dictatorship also, you have a massive participation of women in government, which has had a huge effect on the success, the prosperity of the country. 64% of the parliamentarians are women. And you have this incredible process of truth and reconciliation, which has seen 1.9 million, mostly men, pass through it, and 1.4 million have been sentenced. So, Big difference between both countries.
It is true, is it, that involving women in the process chiefly, or at least half, helps?
It does. Women have a very big impact on not only a successful peace negotiation. Northern Ireland is a great example of that, as we know, in the UK, but also in the years that follow. They're very, very strong at building communities. And, you know, without women participating, peace has a significantly less chance of taking root and being successful.
Gary, I'm coming back to you very soon, but I want to bring in our guests on the programme as well. And Martina Stevis-Gridnev in Brussels, you will know that war reporting is a big badge of honour for serious journalists. How much thought have you given to the post-peace process?
Lots, actually. I mean, it's interesting that Rwanda comes up. It's a country I've covered, and I have a less rosy view of the true reconciliation in the country. But it's clear to me that some elements that are there, that the kind of like are a little less romantic, have to do with clear winners and losers, and support from the international community. Unfortunately, places where conflict continues to be more balanced in terms of winners and losers, where there's no clear winner, have found that peace is much more elusive, for example, South Sudan. And so I think that thinking about war is always means thinking also about peace. But what we do see is most of these countries do fall back into conflict, unfortunately.
And unfortunately, for a journalist, the war story is often more alluring than the peace one.
I don't necessarily think that. I think there may be some kind of macho approach to frontline reporting, which I don't particularly feel attracted
to. I'm not accusing you of it. I'm just wondering if you think it's a thing in general.
No, I understand. I think there's actually great stories in covering peace efforts, which, of course, would go far beyond, you know, drab conference rooms in Geneva, where lots of these conferences do tend to take place. And I think Oliver, my fellow guest this morning, alluded to these sort of breakfasts and coffees and walks with stakeholders in peace. But lasting peace is something very, very difficult to attain. And, you know, equal distribution of the fruits of peace in a post-conflict country is an incredible story for a journalist to tell. It just requires a little more than a flak jacket.
Gary Knight, the man behind this book, Imagine: Reflections on Peace. The world seems very divided right now. Racial divisions in America, Brexit in Europe, and so on and so on. What can countries learn, do you think, even if they're not at war, about resolving their own disputes?
That's a big question. I think Martina's right. The story in Rwanda isn't as rosy as a lot of people point out, but I think there is a lot to learn from the process of truth and reconciliation. You know, if you talk to individual Rwandans, many of your perpetrators and victims living in the same village, it's that the act of sitting down with somebody with whom you have nothing in common, somebody who may have killed your own family, being able to hear the story and move on is pretty important. It's pretty powerful. It's worked in many countries, and it improves the situation. And I think in the United States of America, I think there are many lessons that can be drawn from that process. I think it takes a lot of courage to sit down with your enemy. It takes a lot of courage to sit down and agree to disagree and move forward.
Oliver,
I don't think we're in that space.
There is never a peace process, Oliver, is there, without talking to that enemy?
Without talking, but an essential part for a successful peace process is for it to be inclusive. And I think that is the key lesson of Northern Ireland that hasn't been applied. Unless you bring all parties into the process, it won't work. You'll get an agreement, but it won't be durable. The IRA had to be part of the process to reach the Good Friday Agreement. That's the lesson that hasn't been learned in the Israeli-Palestinian. We exclude groups like Hamas and that should be at the table, should be talking with the other if we're going to reach a durable agreement.
And Gary Knight, just briefly, it always used to be in conflict zones, I'm never talking to the enemy, I will not sit down with them. Nowadays, negotiators sit down with the Taliban practically every week and it doesn't do any good.
Well, yes, but I don't think there are many options. You know, there are a lot of other factors at play in Afghanistan. I think it's important, you know, to go back to Martina's point, winners and losers. I think that is a really critical issue. One of the things that we learned here is if you try and impose peace on a country, it very rarely works. And sometimes allowing a war to go on for a little longer until you have a clear winner is horrible to say.
It's important. Gary Knight, many thanks to the Seven Foundation and author of that new book, BBC World Service.